Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Hi, my name is Greg Daniels, and I feel outraged about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
You should be.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. Yeah. Conan O'Brien doesn't have any friends. Yeah. Poor Conan has no friends. Help him find a friend.
And how long have we been friends?
I live 2 miles from you. I brought you food when you had shingles in your eye.
Yeah, it's true.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I'm sitting with my good pals, my amigos, my chums for life. That's the number four. Sonam Obsession, Matt Hello. Gourley, good to see you both.
Nice. For life, we're committing for life?
Yes. You did. You've more or less, we've been doing this together over 5 years.
No, over 7 years.
And that's a significant, I know, but doing it well for five.
Okay. It's the number four?
That was one of my favorite jokes we ever did. We did a 10th anniversary special for the late night with Conan O'Brien show, and we did it at the Beacon Theater, and it was this big show. It was so much fun and so much great stuff. But one of my favorite things is I'm standing out there and I'm saying it's such a wonderful night. And Mr. T came out.
I remember
and
this.
And he put, oh my God. He handed me a giant, he's Mr. T wearing fatigues and with his mohawk and jewelry. And I was just so delighted because he became a friend of the show and he was such a great guest. And we did remotes together and I went to Chicago with him. He presented me with a gift and he put a big gold number 7 over my neck. And he was like, happy, you know, happy anniversary, Conan. And I said, Mr. T, this is the 7. I've been on the air for 10. And he said, you've only been funny for 7. And then he spun on his heel. He gave me a sharp salute, spun on his heel and marched out, killed. I thought that was a great joke.
That is good.
And God bless you, Mr. T.
That's nice.
We are having an exciting day because I walked in to the offices here at Larchmont, the sprawling corporate massive structure.
It's like one building.
Shut up. I suddenly am set upon by two imps.
Yeah.
Your kids are here today and it's so much fun. Why don't you paint the picture? Because I immediately revert to a 3-year-old when I'm around 3 and 4 years old.
You really do become a child.
Yeah.
Become a child.
Maybe it is who you are. And then mm-hmm. this is like who's not the real one.
There's layers of crud. Like those dishes that are wrapped in bacon. I'm a child, and then there's just layers and layers of high fatty meat surrounding the inner child.
Huh. It's weird. The analogy I thought of was how Superman is Superman, and then Clark Kent is who he pretends to be. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking more along the lines of.
I like that
of.
Better than bacon. Yeah.
No, I think bacon's more apt.
So what happened? You were there, and they were
quiet. They lost their minds when they saw you.
Because I'm like a parade float.
You come in, and you're immediately just like, going at it. You're going crazy. And then they feed off that energy. And then it just turns into a...
We're both chasing each other around. I'm running upstairs. They're chasing me. And then they come running back downstairs and I'm chasing them.
Yeah.
It was really fun to have them around. And the only thing I couldn't do is I tried to get them to freeze. Like, okay, everybody freeze.
Yeah.
And Mikey won't do it.
Mikey has a problem with authority. I don't know where he gets it from. Oh. I really don't know where he gets it from.
It was so funny because I'd say, no, guys. And then when I do this, we all freeze. And I would freeze too.
Yeah.
And he just won't freeze.
No, he won't. He won't listen to you. And then he'll like do it again. And be like, it's funny. And then like, it's not funny. You're not listening. Like, it's just not. You have to stop.
Right.
Do you see yourself? I do it in a much better tone.
Do you see yourself? in him?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Because you never listened to me for years and years. You know that.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's
when I first hired you as my assistant, I'd say freeze. And you'd be like, what? No, that's stupid.
Yeah, well, that was just smart of her, though.
Yeah. You were
good life skills.
You were 30. That was appropriate.
Yeah, your boss tells you to freeze.
Freeze. No, what are you doing, creep?
I just took out my pepper spray.
Yeah.
No, they love you. They really, really love you. And I think that they, like, every time someone would come in, they'd be like, is that Uncle Conan? And, you know, like, they're just really excited to see you.
Burn you a little bit that they love you so much?
Yeah. Why? Yeah. I don't know. I think when they're older.
It bothers you more than anybody.
It does. Yeah. Yeah.
You have kept me away from your daughter, I've noticed. Well. You don't want her forming any attachments to me.
That's not true. I brought her in here before.
Yeah, you bring her in, but you're always like, okay, that's enough. And she starts to, I see light coming into her eyes for the first time, like unbridled joy fun. And you're always let's get out of here. And you wrap her in a blanket and you run away. I'm just going to look at what you've been doodling here.
Oh, dear.
Oh, look at this.
Oh, no.
You've got a Darth Vader that you've drawn. And then is that a Boba Fett? What is that, a glip-glop? And then this is just a regular stormtrooper. These are the renderings of someone who has thought about these guys a lot.
I don't ever draw them, I swear to God, and I just happened to today. And of course, it's the one day that you pick up the piece of paper.
You don't ever draw them.
You don't ever draw them. These are perfectly rendered.
Because I used to draw them in grade school all the time. Uh-huh. You know?
And so you're saying you regress when you're in my presence.
I do.
Look at that. Those are really good.
Those are really good.
You're a very good artist, but it's just interesting to me that this is... this is what I feel like. I'm trying to get you to take an algebra test, and I walk by you, and I'm like, "Mr. Gorley."
That's exactly what happened in high school.
Did you get?
I was horrible at algebra. Absolutely horrible.
Did you have detention a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot, but I was no stranger.
Yeah,
really? You seem like a law-abiding guy.
No, I was a real I got away with a lot. I broke a lot of rules, but I very rarely got caught, and I'm not proud of it.
That's cool.
But I would do things like I wanted to get out of a test, did a full gash wax makeup cut on my hand, and went in to class just pouring blood out of it, going, "I gotta go to the nurse."
And it was very realistic.
Very realistic. Yeah. I had it in my glove compartment of my car in high school.
God. My brother, we had this woman that, my mom went back to work. My dad was at work. And so she got this woman named Eva Murphy, who was from Prince Edward Island. And she would, help clean the house. And she'd put on a meal for us at 5 o'clock. And she was just sort of there to make sure that there was someone at home. And she did a lot, actually. She was wonderful. But my brother Luke once took, I'm selling you out here, but he spent a lot of time. He used that fake vampire blood, and this is ingenious. He just wanted to play a prank on Eva, but he melted red wax on his hand and his upper arm. So it looked like it had,
Jesus.
And then he painstakingly put all this blood on it. And it looked like his hand had accidentally fallen into
a
wood chipper
disposal.
Yeah. It was shredded. His hand looked shredded. And he came running into the kitchen. Was like, Eva Murphy freaked out. And I think Luke then was like, Luke was scared because he just thought he was going to get, oh, you rascal. And instead he came running in with a stump that was shooting blood. Do you know what I mean? It was out of Monty Python, the Holy Grail.
Yeah, man, after my own heart.
Yeah. And I remembered I was horrified. Eva was horrified. Luke was horrified. And,
oh my God.
Well, I don't think so. He's kind of a sociopath, but it was quite, that just triggered me. You just brought up a very painful memory for me.
Yeah.
Is that a butt?
It's a W for rap, but it also could be.
You look at that. Jesus, can I
boobies.
See that, please? Yeah. So you're out of control today. You just drew boobies.
Well, after she said butt, I put some nipples on there. Yeah.
Okay. So now I see why you would go into detention. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
were you ever in detention? I feel like you were like the kid who asked for extra credit.
I was the kid that escorted other kids to detention.
No, you weren't.
Yes, I'm making that up.
I know, but still, were you the kid who was like,
I have him, Principal Thomas. This malefactor.
Nerd, as he draws more Star Wars heads.
Nope. I've taken your boobie. And I've turned it. I took your frown and turned it upside down. So I'm very happy with what I've done. That's real good. I know. And hey, you know the great thing about a podcast? It's perfect for drawing stuff.
Yeah.
But look at that guy. Look at that. See?
Wow, that's really special. Yeah.
He's got booby eyes.
And guess what? His friends call him Titty. Yeah. That's Titty Johnson. I just took back everything I just did.
Okay, so we'll also post these on Team Coco podcasts on Instagram, both the Star Wars heads and Titty Johnson.
Do you want to do that? Do you want to do that again and sound like you're not on lithium?
I'm gonna post these.
Okay, Sylvia Plath.
We'll also post these.
No, I want the other one.
Oh my God. You do it, asshole.
Hey, you want to check out these fun drawings? See the whole evolution of two boobies to a friendly guy named Titty Johnson. Check it out on...
at Team Coco Podcast on Instagram and YouTube.
Yay!
That's the kind of show you've Stupid. Signed up for. Hey, I am very excited.
Yeah.
My guest today is one of my oldest friends, and he also just happens to be... a legendary writer, showrunner, and producer. I mean, he's been responsible for like half of the really good TV shows in the last 25 years.
That's very
true. And he and I go way back, and we got started together. We struck out two lads heading out to LA in 1985. He saved my life in so many ways, and I love him for it. The fourth season of his show, Upload, premieres on Prime Video Monday, August 25th. And he has like 15 other things going too. It's craziness. I am so thrilled he's here today. And I know fans have been wanting this for a long time. The day has come. Greg Daniels, welcome. Anyone who doesn't know, and I think most people know, because Adam Sachs has told me that this might be the most fan-requested interview that we've had over years. People are saying, when are you going to get Greg Daniels here?
And yet I'm guest like 750. I think I should have a podcast Greg Daniels thought he had a friend.
Yeah.
But I guess not.
Look, I waited to monetize our friendship at the peak moment, and I think I've done that.
Middle of the summer.
Yeah.
Who couldn't come because they were on vacation?
You and I met in college, and we both worked on the Harvard Lampoon. We knew each other.
We were in the same class freshman year.
Yes, we did a...
We could talk about a class, I suppose.
Which was like a playwriting class.
No, the other one. There was one that we did one with the same professor about stories. Do you remember in freshman years, the seminar?
I don't. It's all a blur.
Yes. Well, maybe
I was dropping
in
a lot.
I might be thinking of someone else.
I think you're thinking of someone else. You know what we're going to do? We've never done this, but we're going to start again. Watch this. And go.
Got to leave.
All right. For the uninitiated, for people who don't know, Greg and I went to school together. We kind of knew each other. And then I was on the Lampoon. You were competing to get on the Lampoon. You dropped off a car.
Why is that important that you were there first?
I was there.
This is the fourth time you said this intro.
I was on the Lampoon. You were competing to get on the Lampoon.
I could have gone thumbs down. I could have gone thumbs up.
I was the John Lennon and you were the Ringo. Shut up. He was like, I can keep a steady beat. You dropped this cartoon off. I remember that moment very well because you had to leave them on the floor of this building. And I remember going into this room in the Lampoon building where people would just leave their stuff on the floor and looking down and seeing this cartoon. And a good cartoon is like a little silver bullet. It goes right to your brain. You had such a great cartoon, which was, why don't you describe it?
I would never have brought this up.
I thought it was really funny. I thought it was our origin story.
Okay, I suppose if we forget about
cartoon.
The other thing. But very literary cartoon, very small audience, very nerd defining cartoon. But
don't talk down to my people.
It was a
It's a sea captain.
It's a sea captain, old sea captain, and he's at some party and he has a "Hello, my name is" sticker on his shirt, and it says Ishmael.
Ishmael. One of the great lines. Call me Ishmael. And I saw that and I thought, okay, that would be a New Yorker cartoon right now. It was well drawn. We got to know each other, and then both of us were interested in getting into comedy. I'll just speak for myself. The idea of going out into this crazy world by myself was terrifying. And I remembered thinking, gee, I wonder if Greg would do this with me because he's really funny and then I'd have a good friend and we could do it together. That was my feeling.
Yes.
I think you were under the impression that I was very wealthy, which I was not.
Well, the summer before we graduated, we worked on a project.
Yep.
And it was a very fun experience. And I think that comedy is such a social thing. Yeah. That's so much fun to joke around with friends. Yes. And, you know, I prefer it that way for sure. And so I thought, well, that's cool. Let's try that.
And I remember Greg, a brilliant fellow, and you were possibly going to go to law school. And I think your mother was questioning. And I remember when you showed up with me, it's like you show up with your fiance. You showed up with me. And I remembered your dad was like, oh, this sounds fun. And I think your mom was, who I love, by the way, I love your mom and she's fantastic. But she rightfully was a little like, who's this Conan? And he's talking all this nonsense into my son's ear. That's the impression I got.
Yeah, well, that was my two choices, lawyer or comedy writer. Mm-hmm. And I found that people, when I had been a kid and growing up, they would say, you should be a lawyer. And they always said that when they were mad at me because I was being like really annoying and mm-hmm. argumentative. And then sometimes they'd say, you should be a comedian, you should be funny. And they were always saying that when they were happy with me.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, you know what? I think I should probably not go down this path of everybody hating me.
Yeah. So. Well, this part of my life is so seared into my brain, and I'm indebted to you because I don't know what I don't. I think coming out to LA was terrifying to me.
What have you said to the audience about your origin? What can I talk about
anything
that they don't know?
Oh, he ate a lot of burgers and fries and I was weird and lanky.
That's just genetics.
Oh, okay.
That's not about my
for burgers and fries.
We
used to go to Johnny Rockets. Did we talk about this?
And
I had this very annoying running joke with him where I would tell the wait staff it was his birthday every single time that we came so that they would come sing to him.
Yeah, it's annoying. Very annoying. But I think all I have to tell people is that we came out here and we were very frugal. We were very hardworking. We did not have girlfriends.
We shared one car.
Yep.
One apartment and one office.
Wow.
And according to my father, one towel. I don't know if that's true.
No, it's true. It's true. And I'll tell you this. We had an apartment, which I pass every day because I live not far away on Barrington. And I remember us, we had no furniture.
We got mattresses from a parking lot in Watts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yep. We drove there and you pick out your mattress and they throw it on a truck.
They tie it to the top of your car and off you go. It wasn't a store.
Right.
And then,
who's they?
Yeah.
That's not important.
I don't know. There was no warranty to this. It was just
there was no tag on the mattresses.
And it was wrapped in plastic, but it could easily have come from a dead person's apartment. I don't know.
There was weird stains on them, bloody stains.
And we had a subscription to the LA Times because it's very important to know what's going on in your community. And that used to pile up so fast that we built furniture out of it.
We stacked our LA Times. We did not have a couch.
No.
We did not have furniture. So we knew we had to have a television. So we got a television. And I know what it was because my brother Neil tends to, let's say, hang on to things. Somehow my brother Neil, he calls me the other day and he says, I just emailed you something. And I checked my email. He had emailed a photograph. He said, it's an old 1985 TV remote that says Quasar on it. And I said, what is this? And he went, that's the remote control you and Greg had in your apartment in 1985.
It's like the size of a dictionary.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's crazy.
And it's all beat up. And Neil got it because I guess when we got our own places, eventually I took the TV and then it had another life and it went to New York with me. And then eventually Neil gets all appliances. He ended up with it. But the story that everyone needs to know is we shared a terrible car that we bought at like a junkyard near the airport.
Rent-A-Wreck.
Rent-A-Wreck.
There used to be a place you could rent cars, maybe still called Rent-A-Wreck. And when the wrecks got so wrecky that nobody would rent them, then they sold them.
God.
And this looked, it was a 1977 Isuzu Opel, which is a car that I think they made twice and then said,
no more.
No more.
And you could see the ground from in the back seat. There was a corrosion hole.
Stop.
And if you wanted to get rid of your litter, you could just drop it on. Oh my God, so I don't like that.
We were this unit. We were locked in. We worked really hard at our job, at not necessarily the news, but one of the things that was unusual is for young guys who are 22 and out in LA, we didn't drink. We didn't do anything. We didn't do drugs. We didn't. We were kind of interested in having girlfriends, but we didn't know what, how to do that. So I remember you went to like a Mrs. Fields and started chatting up the girl who worked at Mrs. Fields. And you were like, oh, I'm doing pretty well with that. And then
I had a second date with her.
You had a second date. And so here's the best part of that. Greg comes to me because he had some success with the girl at working at Mrs. Fields. And he came back and he went, oh, taking her out. And then he said, I need to speak to you. Can I have the car tomorrow? So he had to ask me if he could borrow the car. And I said, well, that's okay. And then I just stayed home with the TV, the Quasar, and watched the A-Team again. I don't know. But I don't know. It's just, we had
this. This is very accurate.
Yeah.
It's not complimentary, but it's very accurate.
Well, I mean, and then we had these, we were so worried that we were going to get into some kind of, What if the job dries up and we don't have money? And you were more of a taskmaster in a good way about, hey, we got to make sure we don't blow our money when we're out here on our paychecks. So you found a place called Flaky Jake's.
Oh, yeah. My Flaky Jake's scam.
He had a scam at Flaky Jake's.
Yes. So Flaky All Jake's was great. It was this burger restaurant, and they were very proud of the fact that they baked their own buns. And that you would put the burger on the buns and then you'd go and they had hundreds of fixings.
It's like a salad bar, a fixings bar.
Yeah. And, you know, and the whole thing was, you know, I don't know what, like $8 or something, but they would sell the buns for 35 cents. And you got the bun, you got a tray, and then you could go to the fixings and you could put tomatoes and onions and a lot of dressing
Russian
on it.
Dressing.
Pickles.
And, yeah.
And you could make yourself like this vegetarian fixing sandwich. For 35 cents.
So you don't.
Oh.
So they would say, oh. I, of course, didn't subscribe to that. I was 6'4", 155 pounds, which if you do the math, doesn't work. And I was always hungry. I was always perpetually hungry and I couldn't gain weight. So I would say, I'll have the double, triple burger. And then they'd turn to Greg and he'd be like, just the bun, thank you. And then he'd walk over to this thing and he'd pile it mile high with free stuff.
I don't want to take a bad job because I had the burger, you know?
Yeah.
I want to have a little flexibility there.
Yeah. And so.
That's genius.
Yeah.
Though.
So we're driving around. I'm just trying to paint a picture because Greg has gone on to be one of the most successful TV creators of all time. And it's just, it's true. And it's really fun for me to time travel and go back to, you had a kick once when you said, you had read an article that broccoli has all the amino acids you need. So you and I went and you filled bags with broccoli at the store and we came home and we boiled it because that's supposed to be, or steamed it. And then we ate it with some fat-free butter substitute.
Yeah.
And you were chomping it down going, all the amino acids and for very little money. And I was thinking, why did I pick this guy? Why didn't I pick a guy who was like, come on, let's do a few lines and then go to that strip club. Carpe diem.
Yeah.
There was no carpe diem with us.
Yeah, it was Greg holding you back, right?
Yeah, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can you imagine?
I had a t-shirt that said Bikini Inspector.
There was not a nerd vibe in him at all.
No, it was just me. This guy was supposed to go clubbing and you held him back with your burgers.
They say that Leopold and Loeb, neither one of them would have killed if they were alone, but together they were lethal. And that's true of most murdering couples. Greg and I each made the other nerd vibrate, nerd genes vibrate, and we both would get nerdier.
I know. Who knows? Maybe without you, he would have been like, you know, going to the strip clubs and I don't know.
Yeah.
Having a burger.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Having some real protein.
I really want to run with that premise, but it doesn't feel right.
I have such clear memories and they come back to me whenever I drive past our old haunts. Remember, we eventually get separate apartments. I found a $380 a month apartment from Cynthia Stevenson. she had this special apartment that was really cheap. And she said, I'm moving in with my boyfriend. You can have my apartment. You got an apartment not too far away. We're now in the flats in Hollywood. And I'll never forget, you finally decided you were going to get a new car and you were going to come by and show it to me. And of course, you're very practical. You're careful.
I did a lot of research about how you deal with car dealers, and you got to hold the line. You got to go in there and tell them, this is all I got. And so I did that. I did everything right. I went in there and I walked out. They had sold me a car with no air conditioning. I didn't know what to do. I was like, this is it. This is all I can go. And they were like, well, we can make that if you get by this one that has no air conditioning. And I kind of was like, yeah, maybe I don't need it.
And so this is interesting. He comes by my apartment. And this is before cell phones, before anything like that. So I think you called me ahead of time and said, be out in front of your apartment and at 3 o'clock. I'll come by with my new car. I go out. And then you had bought a very sensible Toyota Corolla.
Mm-hmm. I got the one with no air conditioning. And then I also compounded my problem by getting a car that would last forever. would have no air conditioning for years and years.
And I got in, and you were a little defensive. I got in, and there was a giant hole in the middle. This is a brand new car, and there's a giant space that you could put a watermelon in the console. And I said, what goes here? And he went, well, that's normally the air conditioner, but I didn't get that. Right. And
I said, do I sound like that?
No.
What the fuck?
I'm sorry. I forgot. I thought that I partnered with Niles from Frasier. I apologize. No, but Greg said, oh, I didn't get that. And Greg was like, yeah, I didn't get that.
Right, yeah. What the fuck? How you doing?
Hey, don't diss the pussy wagon. I was like, Craig, please. He's like, I'm out on Vag Patrol. I was like, Jesus, Craig. But he said, I didn't get an air conditioner. And I said,
there's only two settings.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know. Don't you need air conditioning? Like, it's fine right now. And it was, of course, February.
Yes,
and
it felt really good in the car without the air conditioning.
After that, anytime we went to a meeting, he was covered in sweat. He looked like he was having a nervous breakdown.
I remember I drove to see you in Chicago.
Yeah,
you
were I did Happy Good Show with Robert Smigel, Bob Odenkirk. Yeah.
And I was going to see you, it was like August. And I drove from LA to Chicago, and I had to sleep during the day and drive at night because it was so hot in the car. I made the mistake of leaving a cassette in the car, and I came back, like when I went to get a hamburger, I came back, it was all curly-cued from heat. Yeah. It was a nightmare car, but I had a
At least you had a hamburger, though. You treated yourself.
Yes.
I'm dying, and so I need a hamburger. I do remember we used to do very strange things to entertain ourselves. We have to sit down and we have to together write all this down sometime.
Yeah, I don't know what you've told folks here. Like one of my favorites was
you're
when,
insane, and I was held back from my life as a fucking suck master.
God,
fucking.
By the way, to Greg and Judy Daniels. I mean, to Aaron and Judy Daniels. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. See, I was a good influence.
We redid the beginning four times, and we won't redo this. That's got to stay.
I'm not redoing this. I'm proud of this.
Oh my God.
I was just remembering the bit where we got into our first kind of argument with the costume designer, and
Saturday Night Live,
and they went to Lauren and they said, "You fire these two, or I'm leaving." Mm-hmm. And Lauren was like, "This is my costume designer. She's terrific, and got all these awards and everything." So he called us into his office, and we were a little nervous.
Yeah, we thought we were getting fired.
Yeah. And he sat down and we just had this conversation. He said, we gotta stay in here about 20 minutes. So she thinks I'm yelling at you. And it was terrific.
It was great. Yeah. He was like, I have to be here for 20 minutes and you're in here too. And just so you know, I'm yelling at you right now. But he wasn't.
You're right.
And we didn't get into a fight. To be fair, all we did was we wrote a sketch and it had these elaborate costumes. And we went to the place where they were manufacturing them just to check on them because we thought, that's what a good writer-producer does, is check on things. And that apparently was us overstepping our bounds, which, okay, I didn't know. We didn't know that. We were brand new. So
yeah,
I don't remember us. We never got into fights with people or yelled at people.
No. We just ignorantly stepped on toes.
Yes.
That just seems normal, though.
Yeah.
I mean, now that's normal.
I don't know. It was one of those things where we were new, and I don't think it would have been an issue if
I think we were pretty nice people, but we had a lot of like bad instincts for Hollywood. Like I remember when before we got to SNL, we had an opportunity to possibly do a movie rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very rare for us. We had never, ever been offered anything like this. So they sent us this script and we read it. And we had this one meeting. We came in and for some reason, we were really concerned that the studio had wasted money because we didn't like the script at all. And we spent the whole time going, can you get the money back? Is that possible?
We were more interested in the studio getting its money back. And we weren't playing the game.
No.
And also, I remember the first meeting we ever had with Howard Klein.
Yeah.
We had a meeting with Howard Klein and Howard was like, okay, well, you guys, there's a good word on you. You're doing a good job. And the next step would be for you guys to do this and this and this. And I cut him off and I said, how does it work if we want to write new lyrics to existing songs? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you know, Elvis Presley had that big hit with Suspicious Minds. What if we just changed it to Suspicious Brains? Can we get paid for that? And he said, get the fuck out of here. I don't know why. Trying to tickle our own brains and be happy.
Well, you had this thing where you wanted to put in our contract that if Bob Hope died,
yes,
we would be released from our contract. Yes. Rules of comedy would have been different.
You know, there's all this boilerplate.
Oh, God.
We got our first contract and it was just, you know, we were staff writers on not necessarily the news. And there's just this stuff that, of course, Greg got out his magnified glasses and was looking and saying, it says here,
well, according to Painsley T. Painsworthy, it says here that Article 4, Section 9,
and it says things like that's been in contract since the beginning of time, literally biblical stuff about fire, plagues, locusts, act of God. And I said, well, I said to Harry Klein, we want a clause in there that if Bob Hope should die, comedy as we know it would be forever changed, and this contract is null and void. And again, he said, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, my God.
I just think I was kicked out of his office like 15 times.
And Bob Hope just kept living, too.
Yeah, he got. He died 6 hours ago, the age of 150. But I will say I have so many happy memories that I wouldn't have had. I'm an anxious person and I put a lot of pressure on myself. And Greg was really just a great.
Just so happy go lucky.
Well, no.
Pot smoking. Just think Owen Wilson.
Yeah. Greg should be played by Owen Wilson from the Stick era. No, we just had a lot of fun doing weird things that. There's a whole story. It's probably a screenplay where you and I decided to just, I think we had seen in the news that Lady Diana or Princess Diana and her husband, Charles, had just been to Vancouver for like a fair. And
there was,
we decided-
there was the Expo.
Expo.
It was like Expo 87 or something. And we saw an ad where they made it look amazing in the ad. And I think you, as a historian type person, knew about the Chicago Expo of like 1904 or something that was very impressive. And we just managed to convince ourselves that if we missed Expo 87 in Vancouver, we would regret it for the rest of our lives.
I still stand by that.
Expo 87.
And by the way, the Expo was over. The Expo was over, but we thought, we'll see the remnants.
Oh, no.
So I remember we flew to Seattle.
It was like all business, too. It's just like Xerox had a thing because they had a new copier.
Yeah.
You know?
There was a new kind of asbestos they were coming out with.
You saw it in the paper, and you're like, we got to go there.
We got to go. So Greg and I fly. I mean, other people on their weekends are, I'm in L.A. I'm going to get on a boat with all my friends. And we did know people, Billy Kimball, Ian Maxtone Graham, who lived in a cool house. They all were writers. They would go out they would rent boats and all split it. And on the weekend, they'd go out and wear yachting caps and have fun. And there were women on the boat. And you're like, we're like, suckers.
Xerox has a new copier. So we're going to be the first to see it. We're going to have our pictures taken with the new Xerox copier.
So we fly to Seattle and then we drive in a, of course, the cheapest rental car you can get. Like,
oh my God.
the Hyundai bulb, and it's a light bulb that they turned into a car. And we drove that from Seattle to Vancouver, and then we're watching. We're in our motel room, quickly sussing out that, well, this expo isn't really happening, and it's raining a lot, and all the exhibits are closed, and there's a half a Ferris wheel. What are we doing here? And then we're spending a lot of time. We got hooked on
Beachcombers. There's a Canadian content show that ran for like 50 years. It's like the Bold and the Beautiful of Canada, called Beachcombers.
The Beachcombers,
I think. The Beachcombers. Yeah. And Bruno Gerussi was the star and creator, I believe.
I'm glad you got that right. That's some mail I don't have to answer.
And we decided we had to go watch it be filmed. And we just became completely obsessed with this film and with this show.
One particular character. We decided there was one particular character on it who didn't have many lines, and we decided we have to meet him. And we made a promise to ourselves, we're going to shake his hand before we leave Vancouver. And then we went and we got reporters' notebooks, and we're interviewing people all over town, pretending we're reporters. And then
we went to the CBC. Mm-hmm. We found out they were shooting at Gibson's Island, mm-hmm. Which I now am like in that community a little bit because I shot Upload up in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so
you've returned to the scene of the crime.
I've returned, yes. People send me like Beachcombers shirts, like all the crew that I worked with there. Yeah, so we had to get to Gibson's like in time to go back to Seattle to get our flight. And we were running out the clock trying to figure out how to get to the set. And we missed the ferry that goes to Gibson's. And it was the last ferry. There'd be no way to get there. So then we went down to the docks and we started talking to fishermen. And we explained our situation.
Like a TV show?
Yes. And we paid some guy to go faster than the ferry in his little fishing boat.
And we're so excited. We jump in this boat and we're beating the ferry and we're like, yeah, we're going to get to the island before the ferry. And then we get on the island and then someone tells us the character we want to shake hands with. He says, oh, yeah. No, I think he lives over on Mapleton Avenue. You and I fan out. And you take
we're
one
pounding on doors.
And
we're pounding on doors, so, randomly going, you know, open up.
And so Greg took the north side of the street. I took the south side of the street. And we just both, and then I'm banging on like my seventh door. Door opens. There's the guy. And I'm like, hold on a second. Greg. Greg comes running. We both shake his hand. He doesn't know what's happening.
He's just accepting that he's got fans from LA that, you know, have made the pilgrimage.
Right.
He's happy.
And we did this. So,
but we have to get on the ferry has docked and is putting on cars, and that's our last chance to make our flight to get back to that ferry, mm-hmm. the one that we beat. Mm-hmm. And we start running down the street trying to get to the ferry, and this woman in a Jeep picks us up. You remember that?
Yeah.
We hitched like this woman. We explained it to her. She completely loved the
randomness,
got into
of
the spirit of
yeah.
it. She like gunned it towards the ferry. Went into the wrong way down a street because, like, the ferry line for the mm-hmm. next ferry was already there and pulled
so
us
up. So
we
had to kill her.
No witnesses. That was the plan.
Still unsolved. But, you know, so flash forward years, Greg's gone on to create half the TV shows people have watched, and I've gone on to my foolishness. And one day I get this, someone tells me, Ari Emanuel, the famous Ari Emanuel's on line one. Agent to the stars. And he's like, I just talked to Greg. He told me the story of you guys.
Yes, he thought it would be a movie.
And he said, it's a movie! And I said, very calmly, no, Ari, it's not.
it's an anecdote.
It's two nerds doing something very nerdy. Yeah, if Anecdote Film starts making films, then maybe, but...
But Ari's got really good instincts, and so I don't know. Maybe that should have been the next project.
That'll be the next thing we do. I knew early on that you were very interested in what turned out to be stuff that most people like, which is character development, story arcs. And I was always like, what? You know, it should be a sketch that's 3 minutes long and it should have a masturbating bear in it. And you'd go, uh-huh, yeah, no, but what happens to the bear over time? And so we decide, you start, I remember initially you were writing, I did an extra season on SNL. You start working on a screenplay.
Then you start working on these different things. I know that you worked, you did work on The Simpsons, you did work on, for Seinfeld, and then you team up, you and Mike Judge do King of the Hill, I think was the, which was...
Yes.
Fantastic. And...
Thank you. That was a lot of fun, and it's coming back August 4th.
Yeah.
Season 14.
Yeah. It's coming back. And you are in this period right now, a real purple patch, which is...
I don't know what that means.
purple patch, I usually means like a very creative sweet spot, because King of the Hill is coming back. You're also launching a season...
Upload is coming, the final season.
Final season of Upload.
August 25th.
August 25th. You showed me the other day your pilot episode, the first episode for... the next generation of The Office.
It's the new documentary by the same crew. That's how we're describing it.
Yes. It's not a reboot. It's nothing like that. You showed it to me, which I loved, by the way. I really loved it.
I like to slip you things. I remember showing you and Beckett Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And I get good feedback from Conan.
Yeah. Beckett said no.
Really?
This can't work. He said cartoon in Texas, that's not gonna work. And he was really vehement about it.
Yes.
And he was like five. I saw the this latest episode for this latest show, the pilot, and it starts, if I'm allowed to say, there's we can cut this out if it's not cool, but there's a moment that's very powerful where the documentary crew is trying to find
it starts with them trying to find out what's up with Dunder Mifflin, and they find out some stuff, and it leads them in a new direction to a different city.
Yeah.
And in the different city, they stumble upon this historic newspaper, which has kind of turned into a ghost newspaper, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's when some other company buys a local newspaper and fires all the reporters and keeps it going, selling ads, but they just print wire stories.
Wire stories, yeah.
And so they see this and they kind of go, oh, that's an interesting subject for documentary. And then this guy comes and he doesn't really have a lot of journalism experience. He's been selling toilet paper at another division of the company.
Yeah.
But he loved being on his college newspaper and he wants to revitalize this newspaper.
He wants to bring it back to a real paper. There's just a great scene in it that's... There's a lot of, about this new show that is putting a light on how much things have changed. So there's old documentary footage of the old newspaper in Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah.
And then they contrast it and you just see 150 people working really hard on these giant machines putting out the paper. And then you see this young woman who's an important character, but she's working at the paper and she's explaining to the documentary crew what they do. And she's just dragging and clicking AP stories and dropping them. Oh. And then a lot of it is just clickbait. There's a thing that automatically tells you, is this too big an article for this page? Yes, it is. And then she has to pick a different article. And I thought, very smart to make it about this right now, especially.
Well, it's you know, people have sort of counted out newspapers, and there is something in the tone of The Office, that this sort of a poignancy of people doing their best in a situation that is not very hip, or people have kind of counted them out. And this new show has got a little more maybe Bad News Bears energy, because they are trying to accomplish something, and you know, they are more inspired than the team that worked at Dunder Mifflin.
And you're working with a guy who started out with me,
yes.
Michael Komen.
Yes.
Michael Komen is one of my, shout out to Michael Komen, one of my all-time favorite late night writers. Brilliant guy, really funny. And he has enough on me to put me in jail. Because he was...
Everybody does.
I was going to say more than Sona.
I think I tackled him 50 times, physically tackled him.
Yes, I've seen the battery... assault and battery things that he hasn't filed.
He's absolutely brilliant, and
I
love that you guys.
He's the guy behind Nathan for You.
Yes,
and when you think about, you know, a show like The Office that takes like a reality format and gets high comedy out of it, I mean, to me, Nathan for You is like the pinnacle. So
yeah,
very excited to be doing this with him.
All I'll think of myself occasionally as being very busy, and then I look at what Greg's doing, and you're doing 15 times the amount of work that I'm doing.
It's very rare that they all come out the same month. I mean, that's like nuts. The paper is September 4th, so between August 4th and September 4th, I have three things coming out. But they've been years in development and working on them and stuff. It's just random that they're...
Right. Well, yeah, I noticed that
I get at least I get an invitation here. I have to do three shows. I don't know what some of the other guests do.
All three.
But I can't imagine they have three shows coming out. The only guests
I interview have an Emmy, a Golden Globe, you know, the whole thing, an EGOT, Tony, Oscar. I've been rooting for you to get on this, and
yes,
I've been waiting.
I know. It's
when
up to
will,
Paula. Right?
When will Greg's career?
He said he called out Paula.
That's what Conan's been saying. He said, I want to get you on, but Paula.
Paula Davis. Who we met at
SNL. Yeah. Yes.
We met Paula at SNL the first day we showed up there in February of 1988. And I started talking to Paula. And she was sitting behind a desk, and she was really funny and quick. And I said, oh, she reminds me of my sister, Kate. I like this Paula. Cut to me hiring her the summer of 1993 to be the head booker at Late Night. And she's still with me, a barnacle that cannot be removed. It's funny. I think about, I don't know about you, but I drive around Los Angeles, and when I'm in New York less so because it doesn't have the same associations, but in LA, 85, 86, 87, I'm constantly passing things, and I have a very strong sense memory of you and I being there. You went off to get your ridiculous car. I decided I need to get a different car than this piece of junk we bought at the
Taurus?
Airport. No, I got a 19... 19- I decided
oh,
I need
no,
a...
Oh, no, yeah, you got a cool car.
Well, it
was
isn't.
It like a Dodge Dart or something?
It's a Dodge Dart. It's the car they drive on Dragnet.
Yes, that
and
was a good one.
I wanted a car that looked like I was a narc from 1972. So I got... And the thing about my... it was a Plymouth Valiant, which is the same thing as a Dodge Dart, pretty much. And it was mustard yellow with a black interior, bench seats.
Yeah.
And when you turned it off, the engine dieseled, which means it kept going. And I remember going on a date and getting out of the car to go open the door for my date, mm-hmm. and opening the door, and I had turned the car off. It was going, and then it was going, and just watching it and thinking, well, this isn't going to happen for me tonight.
Well, I had a window air conditioner in the passenger side for my dates.
The car's a little, it's a little side heavy. I'm trying to think of, and you know what's really fun, which is a really nice memory for me, hosting the Emmys, and I thought of this open that connected all the different shows that
yes,
were Emmy nominated.
That was fun.
And my favorite transition, I always wanted to think of a cool way to get from one show to the next. At the time, Lost had just had its first season, was the big, you know, a huge hit, big show. Everyone's talking about it. So I wash up on the Lost. My plane crash. I'm going to the Emmys to host. My plane crashes. I wash up on the beach and I make myself a hairdryer and get my pompadour going. And then I walk through the jungle. I meet Hurley from Lost. We find the, what was it called? The
hatch.
The hatch. We find the hatch. And he said, we don't know what's down there. And I said, well, I'm going to find out. And I lower into the hatch. And I went to Hawaii and shot this. So I think you can look this thing up online. I go down and suddenly my feet kick through something. And you cut to my feet going through acoustical tile on a office ceiling. And I fall down onto Dwight's desk. And it's the entire cast, that original cast of The Office. Suddenly I'm in the confessional area where I'm giving my testimony, whatever.
Well, you'd actually been like our one celebrity guest star up till that point.
That's
because
right. You guys came to 30 Rock.
We went to 30 Rock and Michael was in New York for a meeting and he was like showing all of his favorite things, like his local pizza place, Sbarro's, and he thought he saw Tina Fey going into
But it wasn't Tina Fey.
Wasn't Tina Fey. It was just somebody who looked vaguely like her. But then you walked by and the camera saw you, but he missed you.
He missed me. And he was... So I'm going by. And I think, I remember just doing like two takes and I came downstairs from my show. But that was magical for me because our different worlds, which are very diverse, came back together again. And you were directing me in your big hit show, your second big hit show. And I was, it was cool. It was really, it was like a nice happening. Like, wait a minute, we're the same guys that
Maybe it's being the same age. I don't know. There's a couple things that go like that. Like the you hosting the Emmys when we won an Emmy and there was something, what were you saying right
before? We were both arrested at the same time.
Yeah. No, but there's like things that, things happen like that.
Oh, no, well. But there was a lot of neat little, that was a moment, getting to work with you on that. And then, I remembered Steve Carell.
That's what I'm remembering. The upfronts. This was hilarious. You were hosting the NBC upfronts the year that we came out.
Yeah.
And I guess there wasn't an enormous amount of overlap there, but this was so funny to me because, and this is probably inappropriate, but the show that they were really pushing hard was Father of the Pride. Uh-huh. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
It was the cartoon.
A cartoon based on Siegfried and Roy.
And Roy had just been, it was about their tigers. It was like, the idea was to take the Siegfried and Roy's tigers and do a family show about them, and it's animated. And
DreamWorks, I think.
Yeah, and then
Roy got literally mauled. A month before it came out, one of the tigers nibbled on Roy's face.
Nibbled.
He just had a nosh, and
nibbled.
And they were like, "Nope, this is actually good for the show."
Yeah,
I remember they were just like,
and
"Nope."
Like they cut to him, right? Like you were on stage with all the advertisers, and they decided they'd beam in Roy in bandages, saying, "It's okay, it's okay,
everything's okay.
I don't have any ill will to my tigers."
Yeah, and he was to show that the tiger was with him too, heavily sedated, jaw wired shut. Anyway, there were all these moments where then our careers would come back together, but all this time. I'll tell you one thing is I've learned a bunch of things about Greg. One is that he doesn't want to just meet me at a restaurant and have a meal. He wants to meet me while we're doing something where our heart rate is up. So you're always saying,
I like walking with people. Walking with people. I don't love having to look into people's faces when I'm talking to them. I prefer some faces are different. I don't know. Sona, I might make an exception.
Hey.
Friendly face. But it's better. It seems better to walk like
I know, but
in parallel,
all,
right?
But it seems
you can talk more.
Sometimes it's a little insane where I'll say it'd be really nice to sit down and I'm hungry. I haven't eaten. You haven't eaten. We could sit down and you're like, no.
I bring a bun with condiments in it for you.
He has a big backpack filled with 33-cent buns and coleslaw and pickles.
Something's never changed.
Yeah, and it's just, that's still what you want to do. That's what you wanted to do in 1985. My dad always said people don't change. They become more so, and I think that's the case.
That's what I like about character comedy, just to talk about that genre. I think that's what people like about it is that you feel that way about your own friends, and then to see somebody on TV, you get to know what their character is like, and to see them act in character over and over again is very, makes you feel like, oh, I know them. That's just like Conan. Conan going like this with his vein popping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
Oh, yeah. 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 We've seen it.
I've been medicated since.
Yeah, we've seen it.
Well, yeah, we were back. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've enjoyed, we have a culture that, says, oh, you shouldn't getting older is not cool. It's not good. And I just know that I'm happier now because.
Well, you're older than me, though.
So. Yes. This is, yes, but I was on the Lampoon first. Greg, there's a 2 month,
April to June.
April to June.
It's a lot more than 2 months.
It's an 8-week difference between our birthdays. And Greg's favorite time of year every year is when I'm 50 and he's 49. And what he does is he calls me on my birthday and he says, how are you? Are you okay? And this goes on for 8 weeks. And then my favorite thing is when that time elapses and it's his birthday, I call him up.
and say, ha ha!
This is really cool. This art kind of banter, doesn't it?
This is like,
you got to imagine Bill Burr's doing that with his friends. And like, right?
No, he's doing much cooler things.
No, I don't think so.
He's doing much cooler things.
I think this is maybe like what Jack Benny would do.
Nope.
With George Burns.
We have maybe what a, we were,
all, this is, feels like a very maybe two Mormon comedians or
I remember I
very present, polite.
It was Greg, speaking of birthdays, we were in Westwood together. We were walking around doing nothing, and it was Greg's birthday, and I said, I've got a birthday present for you. Let's pretend we're firing our talent beams at each other as hard as we can.
Oh, my God.
And he was like,
God.
What? And I said, just each, we'll be firing our, and I blasted you and nothing happened. Then you blasted me and I threw my coat off like I had been vaporized and stepped behind a light pole as if you were so much more talented than I that it vaporized me. And I remembered you were pleased.
This was Conan's idea of a birthday present to me to one day a year. Suggest that I might have some talent that I could do a joke better than
some.
Was this recently or was this like?
It could have been recently.
I was going to say, but I don't know.
This is like 1986, but it could easily have been a couple of weeks ago. Easily.
That's why I'm asking.
Nothing's,
I don't know.
Change that much.
I was going to say, I mean, as a comedy fan, I think the reason people want Greg on here is because the fact that the two of you worked together for so long before the two of you went on to astronomical success on your own it's very rare and it's really cool. I mean, it's cool for me to be in the room with you two just talking about this stuff.
It's funny to me that, because I think back to Greg just brought up, I am a, some would say, demonic. I have a demonic, various demons. And I would sit and I would be anxious. And so I would grind my hands together. And if something wasn't coming, an idea wasn't coming, I would grind. Greg would lean back in his chair and he thought that by whipping his head side to side, it would get blood into a part of his brain and create an idea. So I'd be sitting there. If there was a fly on the wall or a secret camera, it would have seen me pushing my hair through my crazy long, pushing my hands through my hair.
It's very like with Nail and I, the two of us.
Yeah.
We were
There's a fun
weird.
Reference.
Yeah.
I was grinding my hands, my eye vein, my forehead vein coming out, giant hair flying everywhere. And then Greg is—
I'm trying to concentrate.
Greg has his eyes closed and is going, Anyone who came in there would say, you got to medicate them both immediately, right?
Yes.
Medicate these guys. Usually I end these by saying, hey, excited about the new project, but you can't do that with Greg Daniels because it's last season of Upload, continuation of King of the Hill. You have a new show that picks up where The Office, it's the documentary crew that filmed The Office has now gone forward and they're exploring this newspaper, which is tangentially related to Dunder Mifflin. Did I forget anything?
I could talk about a few other things.
Oh my God, it's insane.
I'm connected to this show, Common Side Effects, that people like.
I love that show. You know what? I haven't talked to you about Common Side Effects because you were out of town when Beckett and I binge watched it. Mm. I didn't even know you were. I watched the first episode and loved it and then saw your name.
Yes.
Well, so I didn't know that you were involved.
Mike Judge and I started an animation company about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And so we are producers. And of course, he's very involved in this because he's a voice. And it's done with this amazing animation god named Joe Bennett and Steve Healy, who was a writer on The Office, who you might know. And it's a really good show.
I watched it with my daughter, Nev, who loves anime. So we watched the first one and then again, we were like, well, the next one, then the next one, then the next one. Absolutely fantastic. And I started watching it not knowing about your guys' involvement, but have you seen it?
I absolutely love it. I've seen the whole thing. Similar thing. I watched it because I love Scavenger's Reign, which this I think Joe Bennett did before. And the CEO, I was like, God, that sounds like Mike Judge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then it I was is, like, oh, yeah. My God, it is. And Greg Daniel, what is it? This? It's an amazing show about kind of conspiracies. It's very funny. The animation's beautiful.
It's also really sweet. It's the best animation I've seen in a while.
It's incredible.
Because without giving anything away, watch Common Side Effects. And I've seen it on a bunch of lists as if you're, it's everywhere on these lists, these critics lists of if you're not watching this, then you're an idiot. And shout out, because I know you're not just a fan of Upload,
oh,
David.
I'm obsessed with Upload.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's so good. The whole concept of it and like just everything about it. It's one of those shows that once the season would end, immediately Google when will the next one be out.
Yeah. I know. It's tough. I did you see season three?
I did.
Because season three is dropped during the writers and actors strike.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of fans out there that may not have seen season three.
The
first two seasons had a lot of push behind them, and then we weren't able to publicize season three. So season four is the one coming out August 25th, and that is the final season, wraps up all the stories. And, if you haven't seen season three, you can go check it out now.
This episode drops August 25th, too, so you can...
Oh, how do you like that? Comes out today. Upload comes out today.
Oh, what
everybody.
A coinky-dink. I wonder if a publicist was involved. Greg's publicist is Greg wearing a wig.
This was cut out on the treaties, I tell you. Now let's all go to Flaky Jinks for a bun.
You're the Mrs. Doubtfire of publicists. that is... and I cannot end this without saying a big shout-out to your parents, because your parents, and I've said this before to them, but your parents...
Well, they love you.
Well, they said to me, finally, the son we've always wanted.
Exactly.
They let us
use... They still want you to go to law school, though.
I know. They think I fucked up. Your parents let us use their apartment that first crucial summer when we had no place to live. And I think if they hadn't done that, I don't know what our chances would have been, but that's where we started really working together. It got me out of Boston. It got us both working together seriously. We wrote our packet. We sent it off.
Your parents too, though. I remember working out of your parents' house, and we went to see Spies Like Us.
They were not. Yeah, that's right. Boy, did we have fun.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Remember that movie? Yeah, we would see those kind of
things. We would go see movies if we thought a girl in a bikini was in it.
Yeah,
Greg would see an ad somewhere, and he'd be like, there's a girl in a bikini in the movie. We were true creeps long before the internet was invented.
Spies Like Us, there was a girl on the poster in a full-length fur coat, and we were excited. She could see her
face. There's a nun in it, but she's a girl.
I could see her hands. They poke out of the sleeves.
We went and saw Witness because we went for the action. that barn was erotic. Greg, we got to do this again.
We've scratched the surface.
No, I'm serious. There could be maybe 15 episodes where we talk about us in 85, 86 alone, and people would love that. But
well, that remains to be seen. Let's see how this goes. Well, there was a lot of talk about us alone in the 85, 86.
Yeah.
You may get some comments. This was the most boring.
I don't think so. Adam can weigh in.
This is what people want to hear.
Yeah, this is what they want. Exactly. Sadly, it's what they want to hear. Because you know what? It makes them feel better about themselves.
Yes, finally, you're humanized.
Anyone listening to this suddenly feels like, hey, I'm a stud. These jerks didn't do anything.
I have a couch. My car has air conditioning.
I have an air conditioner in my car, and I have a couch. I'm still going out with the Mrs. Fields girl. Greg, you're go with God. You're killing it. You're killing it, and I couldn't be happier for you.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah.
I love the show.
And you love me. I know you love me, and you're going to end by saying
me. I'll say it.
You didn't say it yet.
No.
I love you, Greg. Love you, Greg. Love you, Greg.
Yeah.
Love you, Greg.
All right, love you back.
Peace out, Tupac.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Conan O'Brien, Sonam Avsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Nick Liao. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering and mixing by Eduardo Perez and Brendan Burns. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 669-587-2847 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. You can also get 3 free months of SiriusXM when you sign up at SiriusXM.com/Conan. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.